All right, so we're going to get started. We might have a few other people come in, but I thought we'd get started. So thank you all for coming. I appreciate it. Hi, I'm Dina Michaels, and as you know, I'm running for Mayor of Fulton. And today's meeting is about listening and learning. I'm here to listen to your ideas and your thoughts about the city of Fulton so that I can learn more about what the community wants to see Fulton be, become, what was, what could be, and what are some of the hurdles that we have and that we're faced with. I'd like to start off talking a little bit about myself, telling you a little bit about me and why I decided to run, and then open it up for discussion. So I grew up in the area, just a few miles down the road in Oswego, and my father worked here at Container Corporation, CCA, for those who might remember, worked here for many years at CCA. So I spent a lot of time in Fulton. My dad had 13 brothers and sisters, and a few of them moved to the city here in Fulton, and so I got to spend a lot of time here growing up, spending the night at my aunt's house or hanging out with my cousins. And I had some relatives who worked for both the police force and the fire department. So I had that connection to Fulton. It helped put food on our table for many years until Container Corporation left the area and my father lost his job. So we were faced with that and we understood it. About 16 years ago, my husband Kevin and I decided to move to Fulton and buy our home here. And we bought our first house here in the city. We decided to raise our boys in the city. We were excited about that. We had a great school district and excited to buy our first home, and the boys were young. I have a son, Jeffrey, and a son, Ryan. They're now 18 and almost 22. So it's been great. It's been great raising them here in the city. Why did I decide to run for mayor? Well, it was because of my boys. As a parent, I'm sure you can understand, we do anything for our kids. Knock on wood, anything, right? To a point. But, you know, raising my kids here and making sure they had a great life, great education, and that they were proud of the city that they were that they grew up in. My oldest son was going to college at ESF. And he said, Mom, you know, this was a few years ago, he said, Mom, I really don't have a reason to move back to Fulton after I graduate from college. As a mom, you don't want to hear that. And I certainly didn't want to hear that. It broke my heart. So, being the type of mom I am, I said, sit down, we're going to talk about this. We need to talk about this. I need to know why you don't have a reason. And he shared those reasons. And it opened a discussion about the things that we loved about our city and the things we were concerned about. And I said, I'm going to give you a reason to want to move back here. And he says, Mom, the only way I see that happening is if you do something about it. Okay, fair enough. I need to do something about it. So I took some time and I thought about that. And I decided that the only way that I could change that and make a difference is if I ran for mayor. So I can talk about it all I want, and I can complain about it all I want, or I could step up and do something about it. So I started to do my research. I went to several schools. I wanted to make sure I understand what it meant to be in city government, and do I have what it takes? So I spent a couple years, and I went to school, and I learned, and I went at all levels. I went to Washington, D.C., and I went to a school for bankers running for office. And I went to Yale Campaign School that was for women and what it meant for a woman running for office. And then I went to the political campaign school in Syracuse that focused on small community government. And that really kind of spoke more to what the Fulton mayor position would be. After I did all of that, I decided, okay, I'm ready. I think I can do this. And I want to do it. So I told my son, I said, okay, I'm ready. I'm going to run for mayor. Yeah, he looked at me and said, yeah, right. And he never thought he'd hear me say that. But I did it, and I threw my hat in, and in January is when I made my announcement. And it was important to me to set that example for my children. I hear too much that we have our families start to separate because they start to move away. And as much as I want my son to be successful, and I want him to reach his dreams, you want him to be able to do that right here at home. Interestingly enough, I will tell you that come full circle, in May, my son graduated from college. And he graduated as a bioprocess engineer. Don't ask me what it is, it's just a great title. But he's a bioprocess engineer. And he was looking for jobs. He applied for 102 different positions. And he wasn't getting any bites. He wasn't hearing anything. Had a bit of a conversation with a company in Kentucky. And then he got two companies to reach out to him and interview him. Punamaki and Sunoco, Addis. And he actually interned at Sunoco for a while during college. Well, both of those companies offered him a job. And he accepted the position at Sunoco, which is now Addis. And he is now right back where he didn't think he would be. And he's living in Fulton, and he's got a full-time job as a process engineer, and he's excited to be a part of what Addis is going to do in our area. And I'm excited because I threw my hat in, and I did my part, and now he's staying here in the community. So it gives me hope that there is opportunity there. So that's where I'm at. That's why I decided to run. And I'm excited about that. I am having so much fun. But what's important to me is that transparency in government and making sure that the community has a voice. And that your needs, your voices are heard, and that your needs are being met. And the way we do that is through first conversation. We have to be able to talk about the things that work and the things that don't work. And then we need to be able to come together as a community to come up with solutions. I don't pretend to have all the answers, and I don't come in thinking that I do. But where I think we're successful is when we work together and we come up with those solutions together. So that's why I'm holding these, because I want to give a sample of when I'm mayor, I want to make sure that we're holding these type of meetings regularly. It might be myself and other department heads standing up here. We were talking about the roads earlier, DPW. Well, let's have the DPW up here and have a conversation. And let's be able to talk about what their role is, what's working, what's not working. Maybe we have Parks and Recreation at these type of meetings, and we talk about that. Maybe we have a grant writer, or we talk about the grants that are available, the money that's available out there, and how do we go get that. So I want to make sure that we're having regular community meetings and we're talking about what's important to the city, and we're always staying relevant and we're always staying on top of it. We can't just have these meetings now and then they stop. We have to continue that conversation as we go forward. So I'd like to open up the floor to conversations, questions, ideas for me, so that we can take note and understand better what the community wants. So. Does anyone want to start?
I'll start.
Okay, hi Kelly.
I give you a lot of credit for attempting to run. I think this is awesome.
And thanks.
You really have done your homework, so it sounds exciting. I don't want to bash the current mayor because I think we all want change. I mean, there's no doubt we all want a change. We're ready for him to leave. But I don't want to throw him under the bus because I do feel that, unfortunately, I think he's caught between a rock and a hard place in a lot of situations. How are you going to change that?
Change the perception about the mayor?
Well, like, all we ever hear is there's no money. Can't do that, there's no money. Can't do that, there's no money. So yes, hopefully there's grant writers, hopefully we'll get the BRI money. There's a lot of hopefulness out there.
Right.
But I do worry that, are you going to be able to do anything different than him? Because I think we are truly caught between a rock and a hard place in this city because we have no money.
So first and foremost, I want to say I have a lot of respect for Mayor Woodward. I've worked with him for many years. I've been on the planning board for 10 years. I've worked alongside of him. He's been a great support. I made sure that I announced to him prior to my announcement. I sat with the mayor and I told him what my intentions were out of respect for his role. We had a great conversation and we've continued to have a great relationship. I have a lot of respect for him, and you're right. There's hurdles that sometimes, it doesn't matter who you are in that role, the hurdles are the hurdles are the hurdles. Can I do it differently? Sure. I have a different outlook. I have a different experience. What I bring to the table is different than what he brings to the table. So that in and of itself is different. My experience in business allows me the opportunity to understand from an economic perspective what opportunities are there. Are we falling short on what we could do? We are. Yes, a grant writer is important. Why is a grant writer important? Well, for those who don't understand what grant writing is all about, often a grant writer, they get a percentage of the grant that they go out after. There is over 15,400 grant opportunities across the country that we could tap into. So where do we get that money from? Well, we know they exist. There's 15,412 whatever grants available, so they're there. But what are we doing to go after that money? When we have our amazing employees of the city who are tasked with having to write grants, if you're not a grant writer and you're asked to write a grant and you're asked to go pave the streets and you're asked to run a fire department and you're asked to go do all the other hats you wear, that grant writing pays the price. You have to have a dedicated person that says, I know what it means to write a grant. It's all about the narrative. It's all about the writing skills that you have and knowing how to speak to the audience that's going to grant that money. When you don't have that person who is skilled in that, we miss a lot of opportunities. First of all, we don't look for them because we don't have the time to look for them. We don't have the time to write them. Grant writing takes a lot of time. So we need to look at hiring a grant writer who gets a percentage of the grant they get. So that there is incentive for them to go get a grant. I get a percentage of the grant, so I'm going to look for more grants, and I'm going to look for grants that are worth a lot more because my payday is, you know, is more lucrative. So we have to do that. There is money to be had. What our neighbors are doing, our surrounding cities are doing, is great. We can celebrate that. We can see what these cities are getting and think, oh, why can't we get that? They have a whole economic development team. We don't. I've been on the planning board for 10 years. I can tell you that there is no economic development team. That doesn't mean there can't be. It just means that there's not right now. So we have to look at that and say, there's money available to us. There's opportunities there. But what's it going to take for us to get that? And I think a grant writer is part of that. So to answer your question, and yes, I do think that it's all about your life experience, it's about your skill set, it's about your outlook and your vision. And you talked about how do we change that mindset of the city? That takes all of us. It takes the entire community. You know, we can go on social media and say, oh, my community really stinks. Nothing ever happens here. It's nothing, you know, nothing positive happens for Fulton. Or we can say, I live in a great city. We live in a great city. And we are going to have great things happen to us because we want people to visit our town. We want people to come and stay here. We want people to see how great it is here. That's where the messaging is. We can talk about the negative or we can talk about the positive. Now, we have to talk about both, but it's all in how we portray ourselves. We can tell everyone around us that City Fulton is hopeless. There's no hope for us. We've never had any of these successes. We're never going to have any of these successes. I disagree with that. Did anyone see the video that accompanied our DRI application? It's a great video.
That was great.
It's a great video. I helped be a part of that process, and we did it in 1 week. That was 1 week. We got all those businesses together. We got all those testimonials ready. We worked with a great local business. It's Shirello's Advertising, and in 1 week we were able to make such an impactful video. And I know that that had impact on our community because everyone's talking about it, everyone's sharing it. That's what it's going to take. It's going to take a positive message campaign in the city to start just turning around the perspective. We haven't been doing that, and we need to do that. We have a lot of great assets in our city. We need to highlight that and then start changing the message. We are a great city. Fulton is amazing. People pass through here to get to our neighboring cities. We need to give them a reason to stop. And that starts with all of us speaking highly and positively of our city. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't talk about the tough stuff. We have to talk about what isn't working, what hasn't worked, what are our challenges. We have to talk about that. But that can't be all we talk about. We've got to make sure, And with all due respect, we have to make sure that the media doesn't only highlight what's going wrong, but we give them reason to highlight what's going right. And we need to make sure that we have a voice in that process, that someone is standing up for the city of Fulton and saying, we're a great city, and we're going to show you that. We need a cheerleader and a leader who's going to show that. To all those people who are saying differently, some of those are right here in our community. So I hope that answers.
Thank you.
What's next? Yes, sir.
Well, first of all, I wanted to talk about grants.
Okay.
I know there's money there. You need someone who knows what they're doing to get the money.
Absolutely.
So
yes.
To be fair to Ron, I think he did a pretty good job with no money. Unfortunately, we're saving the city by cutting back on workers, cutting back on things that the city does for us, and that's not the answer. And if your answer is to cut back, you don't have my vote. I want a city that grows from where we are, and I think that can happen. I think Fulton's got a lot of assets. I happen to have a relative that works for the city. I'd like to mention his name.
Sure.
And I know that right now, quietly, there are a lot of things that are starting to happen, and there are things that they think are going to happen. There are things in development. So we're not sitting still. We're sending people already. We just need to keep going.
So I agree with you. Being on the planning board for 10 years, for those who don't know what the planning board is, what we do as a planning board is we are supposed to plan what the future of the city is. What is the city going to become, or what is it now, and how do we plan for the future? So we have a comprehensive plan. The city creates a comprehensive plan that says, this is our vision of the city. This is who we want to be, who we want to become, and we want to make sure that all projects and all development works towards that vision. So the planning board is really, plays an important role to make sure that development is happening and that we're meeting that vision. So being a part of the planning board, I can say you're absolutely right. There's a lot of things in the works right now. There's a lot of opportunities, a lot of plates spinning, to be honest with you. Our agenda's full. We're meeting every month. Where I can tell you for years, we go months without meeting. So we're meeting regularly and the list is full. I would agree with that. In terms of our employees, we have an amazing team of employees throughout the entire city. And I agree with you that it's not about cutting jobs, but it's about making sure that those who we hire to do the work have the tools and the resources they need. Make sure they're equipped with those tools so that they can do their jobs efficiently and effectively. We often look and say, well, let's just cut jobs because that's going to immediately, right? It's going to immediately cut the bottom line. We're going to be able to get rid of that expense. But what if we look at ways to do our job more efficiently and effectively? If we're able to provide the tools and resources, I've been doing research on training. I can tell you from my experience with the planning board, codes, and zoning, there's a lot of training opportunity needed. There's many times where we fall short of doing our job and doing it well. A lot of wasted time spending working on projects because we just don't quite know what we're doing. And we don't quite have the tools and resources to achieve our goals in a timely manner. We have to make sure that our employees share the vision of our city, that they're on board to want to do great things, that they are supported in doing what they're doing. Our codes department, our DPW, our personnel department, whatever department it is, we have to make sure that they know that we support them in doing the job we hired them to do. It's not my job to micromanage them. As mayor, we can't micromanage the job, but we have to say, you know what? You were hired to do this job. We empower you to do the job that you were hired to do. Here's some tools and resources available to you to help make your job better, easier, more enjoyable. When we do that, the morale increases, and the employees become more motivated. They start sharing ideas. Hey, I thought about doing this. Maybe we can do it this way. When you start sharing ideas and become more motivated to do your job, it's endless what can happen. And we might even save money doing that, because now we're better utilizing our resources. We're better utilizing the employees to do the jobs they were employed to do. It's not about cutting away and keep getting rid of, but it's about taking what we have and assessing it and understanding, does this make sense for us and how can we do better? There's always opportunity to do better. There's always opportunity to learn more. There's always opportunity. We have to change. The world is changing around us. I joked and talked about technology earlier. The world is changing around us. What can we do to change with it? And I'll give you a perfect example. When I go down to pay my taxes or my water bill, I want to be able to use a debit card. I'm a banker, and I know how many debit cards we issue. We're not issuing many checks. And a lot of people don't like to use cash as much. They want to use a debit card. But does the city have the ability to accept that form of payment? And could it help the city? And if we did that, that's one example of how do we become more efficient and effective, and how do we offer solutions versus just get rid of or do away with, but just find a way to be creative in our approach. And making sure that we're being supportive of that. So I think it's really a team effort, and it's first about working with the employees. And in that first year, that's what we're going to have to do. Let's sit down with each department and say, okay, what's working and what's not working? What are you lacking? What do you need? How do we go do that? How do we go get what you need? How do we help your particular department thrive and be successful? That's got to be within that first year. It's all about that relationship building and understanding the departments and understanding the needs, and then finding creative ways. There's a lot of free money out there. There's a lot of free there's a lot of opportunity out there for training. It's not going to cost us anything. We've just got to go after it and provide our employees with that opportunity. Yes?
A couple of things. What I hear,
That's great.
But I hear a lot about poverty. People say, you know, there's an intense population of poverty. I live up the street, and I walk the street down here and downtown, and I see a lot of poverty. And then the other, and homelessness. I've heard about other stories about homelessness that I see OCO has. You know, there's good people who are looking at that. But I wonder, and then one of the concerns I have also is like, you have it on your survey, so it's the opening epidemic. Is it an epidemic here? Or people say there's so much here, and there's, you know, all this negative stuff. And is it true? Is it, how big is it, and what are you going to do about it?
So our community is faced with poverty, it's faced with drugs, it's faced with crime. Does it make us unique? No, it's not unique to Fulton. But what matters to us is Fulton, right? We have to put Fulton first. And what matters to us is what's happening in Fulton. It could be happening all around us, but what we care about is where we live, where we raise our kids, where we work, where we visit, and that's here in Fulton. So while it's not unique to us, it's very important to us. So how do we address that? I'm on the board for Oswego County Opportunities. Yes, there is a need to address poverty in our area, in Oswego County, in Syracuse. Some of the highest poverty levels are in this area. And statistics will show that. Just behind, you know, Flint, Michigan, and Detroit, Syracuse and Oswego County are right there on that list. Do I have the answers for that right now? No. But the first thing we have to do is be aware of it. We have an issue. It is what it is. And we have to know what our resources are available to us to first understand it. There's a whole poverty initiative in Oswego County. There's committees that have been created. There's grant money that has been given. There's a very focused effort on poverty in our community. What I can tell you is not happening is enough representation from the city of Fulton. We've got to make sure we have a seat at the table and a voice in those conversations. We can complain about it, we can talk about it, or we can make sure that we're a part of whatever's happening, the solution, the efforts that are happening. We've got to make sure we have a seat at the table and a voice in the conversation, period. Because I can't speak to it if I'm not knowledgeable about it.
Right.
I can complain about it, but what am I doing to go after the information and understand it? Once we understand it better for our city, and we're a part of those initiatives that are happening, then we can speak intelligently about it and say, okay, then this is what can happen in Fulton. Here's the opportunity. When it comes to drugs, the drug problem is not unique to us, but it's a problem here. And it's more than, we talk about opioids. I will tell you that drug addiction is near and dear to my heart. My husband is 25 months sober, and I'm so proud of him for that. Addiction has been a part of our marriage for much of our marriage. And I know it's more than just the drug. There's more to it than that. It's about understanding how he got there in the first place and understanding what is available to him in the recovery piece. He figured it out. It took him a long time, but he figured it out. We have to know what our resources are in the community. Farnham, OCO, the Bow Foundation. The Bow Foundation was created by Teresa Wilson, whose son died of an overdose. And as a result, she created this foundation and has committed her life to finding a way to solve this problem in our community. Her birthday's coming up, and she just posted on social media, for my birthday, just wanting to donate to the cause so that we can help Oswego County's drug issue, opioid issue. There's a drug task force in the county. There's a seat available for Fulton, and we don't fill that seat. We don't have a seat on that drug task force. Now, if you ask, where is much of that work done? Right here in the city of Fulton. Yet we don't have representation to help have a voice in the process, have a seat at the table. So we can talk about our drug problem, but what are we doing? Now, our police department is fantastic. We have a great police department. We have to make sure we're working with them and understanding what is it that we can do as a community to fight this problem. Their hands are tied on some things. There's this drug Molly. It doesn't show up. It goes undetected. So they can't arrest on it. They can't take action on this drug. That's not a Fulton issue. We have to realize that that is the reality of the world we're in right now. So what can we do since we can't really fight that issue right now, right? We can't do anything. The fact that Molly doesn't show up on a test, but we need to work with the experts. Who are the experts? They're our police department. They're our fire department. They're attorneys. They're these foundations I talked about. It's the drug task force. That's where we start to win on it. We have to understand it. And we have to be a part of it. And until we're a part of it, and we're not right now, let's face it, we're just not a part of it.
Who should be a part of it? A police officer, an alderman, a citizen?
Yes.
Who should
yes.
be?
Yes. All of the above.
Then why didn't anybody put it out there saying, hey, we need somebody from Fulton to represent us?
On the drug task force, it has to be a police officer.
Funding.
It's all law enforcement.
It's funding?
Well, pretty much, because you're taking a cop from full-time and you're
assigning them to this task force.
That has to be, okay, and it's something that we don't
take
have.
Take away from manpower of the police force.
You affect the manpower when we do that. But if we have an issue, we have to say, what do we do? Being creative and finding a way. What's the solution to that? If we go, that's the obstacle, okay, that's the hurdle we're faced with, then what is some solutions that we can overcome that hurdle? That hurdle isn't a stop sign. It's a hurdle. We
There's
can get over it.
Grants available hopefully to help a poor community, right? I mean, you
Fulton
can get on the county, different other county functions and say, yep, we're poor. We have my director from the Y is hoping to get on the Swift County, I can't think of it offhand, but because we're in
Swift County,
she'll get a grant for it. Why can't we get a
There's grants available for specifically for our city. I can tell you, I've met with many individuals, be it engineers who want to talk about our infrastructure, to be it fighting the drugs and crime. There are grants available. I spoke with our sheriff. He's great. The reason I spoke with him is I said, you're very knowledgeable. You understand what grants are available, what training is available, what resources are available to get us the tools, the resources, the technology that's out there. I met with him so I could understand, where can we tap into that? How do we become a part of that? How does Fulton reap those rewards? I want to know how we can get some of those resources to, for us, so that we can be a safer community, a healthier community. It really starts, I know it seems so basic, but that's where it starts. We've got to do our research and understand where those opportunities are, and then understand how we fit into that. Yes, it's a problem. There's no denying that. We have a great police department that we want to make sure that they have the tools and resources they need. But as a community, we have to have a seat at the table and a voice in the conversation so that we can fight for our city and ensure that safety is first and foremost. I don't want to raise my family in a community that's not safe.
No.
Nobody does. So we want to be able to walk down the street and make sure that we feel safe doing that. And I will tell you, since 2000, I think it was 2017, our crime has actually dropped here in the city. According to the FBI, crime has dropped overall in the city of Fulton. So, I mean, we're doing something right, but we need to do more. We need to do better. We just need to keep doing that. And those are some of the areas I think we can work on.
Cindy Woods.
Hi, Cindy.
You mentioned your business experience,
yes,
and you have a slew of issues that are perceived or otherwise on the front. And I guess from my perspective, I would like to know how you can take a look at all of these issues and with your experience, prioritize the ones that you see most immediate and maybe down to a degree.
Mm-hmm. Depending on what area we're talking about, if we look at economic development, I think we have to section the city off, let's say into five areas. You know, we have the Nestle's property, we have the lake, we have downtown. And we section that off and we look at those areas and first understand the need, understand the opportunities, and then prioritize those. We just applied for a DRI grant, you know, and given, you know, the decision on that, if we were to get it, that's going to change our priority. Because now we have this grant that dictates kind of what we have to do, so your priorities shift. If we don't get it, well, the priorities are going to shift a different way. So from an economic development perspective, I think we have to understand, first of all, do an assessment of the city and understand where the need is. I don't think we can just go in, and I'm not going to be that person that just goes in and says, okay, day one, we're going to start making all these changes. Day one means let's get in and understand what we have to work with, what are the challenges that we learned from the community, and now we take those challenges and we take those successes, and then we prioritize the list. We prioritize the list based on need. You want to make sure that the community's safe, the community's secure. That's important. You want to make sure that we are growing, but we can't grow economically. We can't ask businesses to come in. We don't have it right now. So I can't go out there and solicit for businesses to come into our town until we figure out, are we doing it right for the businesses here right now? Do we have safe neighborhoods for their employees to work in? To live in, excuse me. Is there recreational stuff to do? I was meeting with Hudamaki a few months ago, and I keep seeing their signs that they're still hiring, but they're not filling the positions. And I asked them why, and they said, because we can't get people who want to live here. We can't get skilled workforce who have the skills to do the job, and then when we do find someone, we can't get them to want to live here in the community. So what's the priority? First and foremost, you've got to ask the questions. You've got to get out there and understand, where are we at currently? That's why I've been doing it since January. I'm going out and I'm asking the questions. I'm making sure I understand what the business needs are, what are the community needs, the homeowners, those who are visiting, just visiting our community, what are their concerns? Why aren't they stopping here? I want to know that. That's got to be the first part. You've got to do your research. You've got to understand it before you can just have to take action. Once we understand it and we work with those employees who are our resources who can actually implement, then we have to say, okay, now we got to prioritize it. The DPW is going to have their priority list. Fire department's going to have their priority list. The police department's going to have their priority list, and so on. And we've got to make sure that we are on the same page, working towards a similar vision, and then I have to make sure that I bring my ideas to the table. I hear the ideas that are coming from those departments, and we're working together to create that priority list, and now we're talking about how we achieve that together. That's going to change, as with any priority list. I'm driving to go get my groceries. My groceries is, my priority is to get the groceries, and I get a flat tire. Now my priority is the flat tire. Those things are going to happen. We have to be prepared for it. We can't, we have a vision. We have a goal. This is what we want to achieve. That doesn't change. The goal and the vision doesn't change. Maybe it adjusts a little bit, but that stays the same. How we get there, it's going to change. It's what happens in all of our lives, right? We kind of go down this path. It's not straight and narrow. It curves a little bit. And we change our priorities according to what comes from that process. I can tell you right now what some of my priorities are: working with codes, working with planning, and working with zoning. That's a priority. It has to be a priority because that, a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about today comes from those three areas. And that's where those areas can have impact on absentee landlords, can have impact on crime and drugs, can have impact on development and businesses and safe neighborhoods. That's where it starts. So my priority is that. What does that mean right now? I'm not really sure because we're doing a lot of research and I have some ideas. But that's where maybe the priority starts for me. Because that's where I think we have the biggest impact initially. We start to see the most results.
Can you name those three again?
The three that I think: codes, planning, and zoning.
The
codes department, code enforcement.
Planning,
the planning board, and the zoning, the ZBA, the zoning board.
Okay.
They really kind of are
yeah.
all work together, or should all work together. Does that help? What else? Yes, hi.
You mentioned codes.
Yeah.
Where are you going to get the power to enforce this stuff? I see the laws protect spotters, they protect dirt bags, they protect trash all over. Nothing seems to change. We just drove by a house, a rental house on the way down here. Garbage all over the yard.
Yeah.
So we as a city create the legislation that enforces that. So we have an alderman in the room. He's great. We have great city officials who help to create those laws. And we have to take a look at those and say, if they were relevant 20 years ago, are they still relevant now? Are they effective? Is it the codes, do they make sense for our city today? And if they say, okay, if we say, yeah, sure, they do. I'll give you a perfect example. The other day we had a house, there was a complaint about a house that had a pop-up camper and a boat in the front yard of the city. After looking into it, there was once a code that says you can't have those campers. That code got changed and says, now it's okay. Right? So that's what we have to understand. When we drive down the street and say, well, that's not right, that... We have to first understand, does the code say it can or can't be that way? We have to assess that, understand it. We have the ability to change that. What happens, I, as mayor, I can make a recommendation, but that legislative body is the common council. They vote on the yay or nay of that. But we can make recommendations on what makes sense for our city. But you don't want to create codes if you don't understand what the vision of the city is. Who are we? Are we a bedroom community? Are we a community that wants to attract tourism? Do we want to be a community that's majority rentals? I mean, who are we? Who do we want to be? Once we really make sure we understand what our vision is, we start to look at those codes and say, does those codes make sense to who we want to be? We have to look at it. We tried to do something on the planning board the other day, and we looked back at a code from 1958. Okay, so we had to look at this code from 1958. Yeah, we didn't have a form to follow through on the process. There was never a form created for this. So we had to go out there and create this form. Yet it was created in, this code was created in 1958. So that's my point in saying we're falling short in those areas. We can't just be order takers and kind of do things on the fly. We have to really take a concerted effort to sit down and say, okay, here's our code. It's going to be a lot of work. It's not going to be easy, but we got to do it. We have to sit down and say, do these codes still make sense? And are they going to help us? And are they going to help us achieve our goals? We don't want garbage in the front yard. Okay, do we have codes that say that? Now we get to that place and we say, now how are we going to enforce them? Well, we got to make sure that codes are allowed to do their job. And they have to make sure that those who are in that codes department are going to do their job. are you going to go out and are you going to issue the violations? Once you issue the violations, what's the next step? We've got to make sure that our police department's on board. We got to make sure that our fire department's on board. They all participate in the code aspect. Then we got to make sure our court system is on board. Because once they get in front of the judge, what's the judge doing with that information? Is it a slap on the hand and said, that's okay? And we also have to understand the laws. I don't know if anyone's read the recent landlord-tenant laws that have changed, but they're much more in favor of the tenant than they are the landlord. So what restrictions does that put on us? 2 months ago, landlords were handling their properties differently. Now, they have to handle them a different way. But we have to stay on top of that and make sure that our resources, our employees, are understanding that. And as soon as that changes, what does that mean for us? It's not just the landlord-tenant that affects, but it affects our code department. What code enforcement we can and can't do, how do we adjust to that? We've got to work with our codes department, make sure the codes are relevant, that they make sense, that we're enforcing them. We're not micromanaging. That can't come from me as a mayor. I can't do codes in my department. I have to make sure that I'm supporting them doing their job, and then when they do enforce a code, I make sure that I support that and say, okay, well, that's what the process is. I support that. I can't negate that based on title. I have to make sure I support that and say, well, this is the direction our city's going in. And you know what? We're not going to put up with this anymore. We are Fulton. We're putting Fulton first. And you know what? Absentee landlord that's not taking care of their property, we're holding you accountable. Tenants who aren't taking care of their property, we're going to hold you accountable. Whether that be add it to their water bill, add it to their taxes. We can look at some of our surrounding communities and see what they're doing. They do a block blitz to make sure that you go through and they're cleaning up their neighborhood and they're holding them accountable. They're holding them accountable to make sure that if you have rundown properties and you've been given the opportunity to fix that up and you didn't, we're going to fix it up for you, but what's going to go on to your tax bill? There's a lot of ways to look at it. I don't know the exact solution for that right now, but the bottom line is accountability. It's accountability internally at the city level. We're holding ourselves accountable to do the jobs we're supposed to do. We can't be afraid to do it. We can't be afraid if we might ruffle some feathers. But at the same time, we want to deliver great customer service. If you're a homeowner who might have some chipped paint on, I don't want to just slap a violation on you, but I want to go to you and say, maybe have your alderman or talk to you and say, you know what, we want to work with you on this. It is a violation. Is there anything we can do? We have an amazing full block builders program. Maybe that's something you'll qualify for. Maybe there's some other opportunities through the Community Development Agency to get you some grants on that to help you with that. But we're going to give you X amount of time to fix that. And if it's not fixed by that time, we're going to have to implement that violation. It's being reasonable. It's delivering great customer service, but then at the same time, making sure that the accountability doesn't go away. We're all accountable to our community, and if we're not enforcing that, well, then we see the things we see that are eyesores or, you know, they disrupt the look of our communities. I hope that answers your question a little bit.
Well, then you just said the time frame. The time frame just...
Let me tell you something about that. The landlords, what happens is these absentee landlords, you try to hold accountable. They know the system well. So they know how to manipulate that system, and that's when I say we have to work with the court system and say, you know what, we've got to make sure that accountability happens at all levels, and when they know the system well enough, then that's where it tells me something's broken. How do we then implement changes to that system so that, let's face it, we want to deliver great customer service to anyone who wants to do business with us, be it a business owner, a landlord, a homeowner, a tenant. We want to deliver great customer service, but there's a limit. There's a limit to how much you can take advantage of that system. Our Common Council just passed some laws, what was it, last year in 2018, on how to hold landlords and these properties more accountable. And now it's encouraging them to go out there and be able to feel comfortable that we have other systems in place. We can make those changes, but are the other systems in place that go along with that going to support those changes? And we've got to make sure that we have those systems in place. And time frame is one of those. You know, the system, you keep beating the system, it doesn't work to our advantage. I think some of our fees, we raise them up. You know, $200 slap on the hand. $1,000, it stings a little bit more. Start looking at that and understanding what that impact is. Now if you have to pay $1,000 for that same thing you were paying $200 for, I might stop and look at that a little bit differently than I used to.
What about businesses?
Yeah.
I serve businesses that closed up, left, and left. I mean, it's all over, both of them. Coming in closing on 41, which is such an eyesore. I'll be trying to say, what can be done about the businesses? I came to the city hall complaining about the Dollar General downtown, and I didn't get a response after I went. And I did it the right way. I went to the manager first, and I went through all the regional giants, whatever.
I mean, you didn't like the diapers hanging on the outside of the thing when you drove?
The whole thing. I mean, it's, I don't want to get into here, but...
And I say that because...
I spoke up, and I believe this with all my heart. A lot of people who are poor go to that store. I was going to, a lot of elderly people go to that store because we deserve better. You talk about downtown, lots of stories going to happen, and there's an example right there, right now. And I want to know about the businesses. What is, they're all over. They're run down, they're dirty, the grass is growing. You know. What is it?
So in particular, that store, you're right. We have a community who uses that store. That's great. But are we working, have we walked in the store as a city and said, we want to work for you? This is what our vision is. This is what we expect. This is the gateway to the city. This is what people see when they first come in here.
Right.
What are we doing to make that aesthetically pleasing so that people go, wow, this is beautiful?
Yeah.
That falls on us. If we're not holding that accountability there, by accountability, I mean, let's walk in and have a conversation. Hey, what can we do to clean up that area so that we don't see all that in your windows? And what can we do to have some curb appeal here? We are responsible as a city to make sure that that happens, first and foremost. If then the businesses don't adhere to it, well, that's a whole different conversation and a level of accountability. Some of these rundown properties, they might be owned by the city right now. I will tell you that there's quite a few of these rundown properties. GJP was just bought by a very good business. I talked to the business owner today in Oswego, and I said, I want to sit down with you and understand exactly what your vision is for that property. GJP, that pizza area, is run down. It's an eyesore, but it's going to change. We have a large warehouse out by Taco Bell. It's an eyesore. It always has been. It doesn't look aesthetically appealing. Well, we have an investor in that who wants to invest, knock it down, and change that whole landscape. It's an awesome project that's coming along. We have a business who left here and went a short ways down the road, and they own a property here. We've got to make sure that that property doesn't just stay for sale, but we work with our real estate agents. We work with the business owner. We work with those who might be interested in the city. We got to sell ourselves. We got to sell ourselves and say, this is why you want to invest in our city. This is why we want you to take that property and turn it into something new and visually appealing. We're not there quite yet because we have other work to do to make sure. If we're not working with the current businesses to make sure that their businesses can thrive, and we haven't quite figured it out how to work with our current businesses now, we can't expect to invite new in who are going to want to be there. There's just too much work to be done right now. But we can start, it starts day one to have a plan on how we're going to get there. The cleaning up piece of it goes back to codes. We have to work with our codes department to say, okay, what can we do about that? But it wouldn't have got that way in the first place had we held them accountable along the way and said, here's our expectation. The Spectrum building is coming in over in the Nestle's parking lot. And we just met with them on Monday. And what we said to them is, okay, well, there's a lot of green space coming in there. Great. That's going to look great. And there's fencing going in. Wonderful. In the spring of 2020, they've been awarded a grant from the county to put trees all up in there, and there's going to be quite a few trees. Beautiful. It's going to really clean up that property. They're going to blacktop the entire property except for one section. So we asked them, well, why aren't you blacktopping that one section? They said, we don't have the money to do it. We're going to fall short, but we're budgeting it for 2020 to be able to blacktop that one section, but the rest of it's going to be. We're still going to seal it and stripe that one section. We just can't blacktop it all, but the rest of it we're going to. And we said, well, what about your dumpster? And they said, well, it's behind the fence. And I said, you know what, though? Our codes say that you have to have it enclosed. And I granted it's behind the fence, but part of that fence is, you know, you can still see through it. So we really want a fence around that. And hey, when the plow comes around your corner there, that green space is beautiful. But when the plow comes around that corner, it's going to rip up all that green. Are you going to fix it every year? Or do you want to address it now so that it doesn't look like an eyesore in the spring? The planning board has the ability to affect that vision and affect what these properties look like. If we continue to have conversations like that, you know what the business said to us? Okay, yeah, we'll put a full enclosure around your dumpster. Okay, great. Okay, yeah, we understand what you want here, and are you willing to work with us as a city, because we can't do the whole blacktop right now this year, but we're budgeting it. Yep, we understand that now. We put it in the minutes. We know now we got to follow up with it. We get it in the minutes. It becomes official information. Now the codes have it and says, okay, code says next year I can go and follow up with that and make sure that they're following through on their end. Some of this is a lack of follow through because maybe it's a lack of manpower, maybe it's a lack of knowledge, it's a lack of resources. But once we continue to do that, just like we're doing with the Spectrum building, we can start to see progress in these areas that maybe were one's eyesores.
I think you had a key, it's followed. Mm-hmm. I know the media jumps because we want to have positive things that are going to be happening. There's nothing worse in this idea than being hopeful and then dash the next moment. Like, people put out this vision that I heard the man myself, so, you know, that we were going to be swimming in Cross River there by Lake Nanawana 2 summers ago. Then we're thinking, oh, wow. And then Nestle's comes, and then they leave, and we have hope that something's going to happen there. I know all these.
And that's what transparency in government.
I mean, the follow through is so important.
We can be hopeful, and we can have vision, and we can be optimistic, and we can be proud, but we have to be honest,
yeah.
And we have to be transparent, and we cannot give false information or false hope.
Yeah.
We have to say, this is what we're dealing with. This is what we hope to achieve. However, this is the process we have to go through to get there. And talk about the hurdles along the way. Talk about why things aren't happening at the speed or at the level we thought they were going to happen. But we need to know that up front. And we don't want to deliver false promises and false hope. We don't want to deliver, and just because it's exciting to say this is what we want. Great, let's have that vision and say this is what we want it to become, but let's be realistic about how we get there and the time frame and if it's possible. And that's what we have to do. We can't give out false information and false hope, because it is discouraging. And after a while, what happens is you stop listening.
Yes.
And you stop hearing the message. And we want the community to stay engaged and to believe in the direction we're moving in, and not to feel like hope is lost.
Yeah.
Hi, Leah.
Hi, how are you doing? I'm Leah Haggerty. I just have a concern, and I know it is a law at the state level, but I didn't know what we could do as a community to keep our community safe from drug houses that are vacant and there are squatters in there and they have squatters' rights. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I think it makes neighborhoods to be unsafe, and it's concerning. But I didn't know what else we could do at a city level, because this is state mandated with regulations and laws about squatter rights.
It's a great question, and it's a great concern. Larry, did you have thoughts on that?
A little bit. What we try to do on the county council is just one. We tell the police department, they try to send DPW to try to board up the houses. We know what's on the site, just to keep the squatters out of these vacant houses. But recently, with these changes in the laws, that should send a message to people. We clearly have Albany and the governor that just doesn't care. So we've got to try to find a way to work around.
For our children.
Yes, we've got to work on this somehow. Because I had a couple of houses in my ward like that. But again, it looks unsightly when you've got part of the board or fired up over doors
right,
and windows.
Right.
But
that's a short time, and it's going to work.
Correct.
And so at least it would be safe if they don't pull it off. There's none of the other communities that have
exactly
the same problem, and what are they
exactly
doing to
address that's
that?
Where that's what we have.
What are they doing to go around these awful laws that Albany has put out?
because there's laws that are coming. First of all, let me say about that. I think we have to build a relationship with Albany, first of all, and Fulton has to be a part of that conversation. And, you know, we can't be, who's really, is anyone paying attention to Fulton from that level? Well, we want them to start paying attention to us and saying, you know what? We're Fulton, New York. We want you to pay attention to us, and we, you know what? We want you to hear what we have to say and build that relationship. We have to understand the laws and understand what we can and what we can't do. That's first and foremost, because there may be certain things we can't do and our hands are tied because of the law. That's unfortunate, but it might be the reality. But you've hit on a key point. There's enough towns that we can research and make them the case studies to say, well, they're doing this. How did they get around that? What are they doing to address this issue? And learn from them. Let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's just figure out what's being done and say, can we do that same thing here? The other thing we have to do, I'm going to go back to the same thing, is accountability. There's a property owner there. What can we do with that property owner to hold them accountable? Are there code violations? What is the codes department doing? What can they do to address that issue? So there's a lot of different levels there, but we have to understand legally what is restricting us, what's holding us back, and does that come from a level that is beyond our necessarily our control, but that we can still make and have impact.
To go around.
Absolutely. What can we have to be creative and find ways that we can. It's not acceptable in our community.
Even an absentee landlord can't kick out squatters.
So we have to be creative and say that's not acceptable in our community anymore. So what can we do? And we have to be able to put the time and effort in. Going back to your question earlier and saying, we have to make sure that the employees that we have employed in their roles have time to look into stuff like that. Does our code department right now have time to look into that? They don't. They're limited in staff, they're limited in resources, they're overworked, and they have too much on their plate. So they don't even have the ability to look into that. They can't allocate the time to do that. But if we provide them the tools and resources, and they now have a team, and they can, someone on that team can now look into that. If we're not looking into it right now, we're really not making the effort to address the problem because we just can't. We don't have the time and resources to do it. But when we do, now we can start looking at some of those solutions. And at least communicating the information to the community, I want to implement a see something, say something program. See something, say something with drugs. See something, say something with crime. See something, say something with eyesores. Three different phone numbers that you can call and be anonymous, but report it. And then something has to happen. It's now reported, I've seen it, I've said something, it's reported, now we've got to do something about it. That see something, say something can cross many different areas of the city, but that's going to allow the community to have a voice and not feel like it's falling on deaf ears. I want to make sure that our common council is encouraged to have community neighborhood watch meetings. Neighborhood watch meetings are valuable. They're meetings just like this that give you a voice in your community. There's six wards. And sometimes it's hard to come and get a large representation from all different wards here in one meeting. But having smaller meetings per ward, say what's happening. What's happening in the third ward is not what's happening in the first ward. Let's face it. What's happening in the fifth ward, where I can tell you the fire department says they spend most of their time doing drug overdoses, is in the fifth ward. I didn't know that as a fifth ward resident. But now I'm mindful of it, I'm aware of it, and I'm thinking, well, that's a different conversation. That's not happening in the third ward. So having these neighborhood watch meetings so that the community in that ward can say, here's our concerns for our ward, our community, and this is what we want to address. Maybe some wards have more squatter homes in it than others, because I can tell you that the third ward isn't having that problem. And so it's not on their radar. But first ward, I know it's having that problem, and they did a whole write-up on it. It's on their radar. So to try to think that we can have that conversation with everyone and everyone really understands it and appreciates it, we start having it where it is most impactful, and then we start communicating it to the community as a whole to say this is how we're addressing that issue.
I'm part of a lot of buildings, and one of the biggest part of our program is the neighborhood initiative. It's not so much fixing up the front of your home, it's about getting to know your neighbors. And in my personal neighborhood, I'm in the second floor, and I have three, I'm one of five houses on my street, on my block, and there's three empty houses. One is owned by a landlord, the other two are in foreclosure, now the city has them, and they have boarded one of them up. But I took it upon myself to say to my neighbors and that landlord, you need better lighting around your house. I'm not going to put up with squatters. And so I've talked to the two other neighbors in my neighborhood to say, you know, we barely, that's the problem, we all barely wave to one another because nobody wants to get to know your neighbors. The woods know this, they've been part of block builders now. This is just
yep, we talked about
it. But I'm just saying, I took it upon myself to go around my block to say, look, I have these empty houses on my block. Watch the houses. I joke that I'm the Gladys Kravitz of the neighborhood because I'm nosy, but that's the point, and I'm going to make sure
it's
there's
okay to
no damn squatters in those
yeah.
houses because I know the code enforcement department has two people. Mm-hmm. They can't yeah. do it all. Mm-hmm. I don't know my alderman. I haven't gone to my alderman, but I'm trying to take it upon myself to work on my neighborhood, and I think that's where, as a city, like you said in the beginning, we have to work together. Mm-hmm. It's not your job, and it's not his job. Mm-hmm. It's all of mm-hmm. us. We have to be responsible for each other and accountability.
I thank you for sharing that, and I agree. We need to make sure that you know your aldermen, and that in our wards, we know who our representatives are because we voted them in there, and now they're representing our area, so that's an important piece. But the other piece, I had a similar issue at my house, and I have, I live on the fifth ward, and I had a rental next to me. I have a rental next to me, and a lot of stuff was happening there. Crime, the police were there, the fire department was showing up, and they just weren't taking care of it. Broken windows, trash, you name it. And the property owner, the landlord, I can't tell you how many times we reached out to him. He just didn't care. So we brought it up to the aldermen to, you know, try to do some code enforcement there, and, you know, they went through their process. And then I did something different. I went over to the neighbors. I said, what can we do to help? And they said, you know, thank you. Your house looks so nice, but our landlord doesn't care, so we don't care, and he's just not helping us fix the inside. What do we care about the outside? It was one of those conversations. And I said, anything we can do to help? Do you need to borrow our lawnmower? We can borrow a lawnmower if you need it. That conversation totally changed how that property was taken care of. They are always, I saw them out there yesterday making sure that they have young kids, right? There's a bunch of young kids over there, making sure the garbage was picked up, making sure that they were planting flowers the other day. The dog ran over into our yard and they're like, oh, no, don't ruin their nice flowers. You know, like they cared. All of a sudden they cared. And the only difference was is that I had a great conversation with them. And I just talked to him about how important it is to how our neighborhood looks. Now, can that happen every time? No, but it can't happen every time. And there's some houses we don't want to walk up to at all and have the conversation, let's face it. But I think there are times when that works. And I was frustrated, so I was just going right to the landlord, and I was going to codes, and I was going to my alderman, and I was frustrated and said, this is ridiculous. And finally, I'm just going to go to the people, and I'm going to talk to them, and I'm going to say, this is the expectation. Look at our community. Look at our neighborhood. Look at our block. Look around you and see what the homes are doing. This home stands out for the wrong reason. Then I called a homeowner that just bought a property down that was in foreclosure, and they just bought it, and they fixed it up, and I called them, and I thanked them for all the work that they did and how nice it looks. That house, when the previous homeowners bought it, was $50,000. When the new homeowners just bought it, they just sold it. They sold it for $90,000 because they put in, you know, some work into that house and they cared about it. We had a landlord who said, I care about this house. And he put some, you know, elbow grease into it and he just sold it for $90,000 from someone living in, I believe they're coming from Brewerton, I believe is where it's coming from. I called the, now I can't think of the name, the business going right out of the city. It's all, the building's all red. Lindsay, I called them and said, thank you so much for what you're doing to your business. That it looks beautiful. You've done such a great job, and it's beautiful to come into the city and see that. I simply thanked her. She's like, that feels so good. I thank you so much. I appreciate that. She said somebody from Minnesota was driving by and called them and said, what color paint is that? I want to paint that on my house. We just thanked them and said, thank you for making it look so nice. I think it goes a long way when we see something that really works well, Fulton Block Builders and the signs in the third ward look amazing when you walk through that neighborhood and you see these welcome signs that are just so appealing. I think it goes a long way. It's not the solution to everything, but it's one thing we can do to make a difference. And I know Fulton Block Builders is doing it, and I think as a community we could probably do a little bit more of that. But we're not going to do that until we start to feel that pride and that.
I think the Friends of Parks.
Friends of Fulton Parks and Kelly and that team is doing great. Yeah, and where's all that coming from? Grant money. I've worked with her closely, and Dr. Lopez, it's all grant money. That's where that's coming from.
Sorry to interrupt you. 4 to 7, so.
Okay, thank you.
Wow.
Yeah, a couple more questions. We'll wrap it up.
One area of our life we haven't talked about is churches.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder about how the churches can kind of be a part of all the conversation. It's great for the city and for the officials and all that, but we're looking at ways how can we help the community. So, and
Well, thank you for asking that question. I worked recently, I've met with Pastor Steve from the Fulton Alliance Church. He was a part of the DRI conversation, and he offered a letter of support.
Yeah, I saw that
letter of support. And he said to us, we want to do more in the community.
Yeah.
Get us involved. Engage us. Help us be a part more a part of the community, whether it's maybe someone who can't afford to put up a fence, but we can help them with their fence, or they need new front steps, and maybe we can help with that, or planting flowers. The list goes on.
Yeah.
But and he says that there's a congregation of people and of churches that want to come together and help that. So yeah, so I've had that conversation, and he's open to working with the city and under that next administration to make sure that that support is there and that support's offered.
Mm-hmm.
Hi.
Hi, my name is Derek Stern. I'm from the Third Ward. I had a question specifically on the squatters problem that they're having. I bought a house in 2005, my wife and I bought a house. And in our road, as the drive to come here, in 2004, there was three houses that were left empty for 15 years, empty. But the question for me is, isn't there something that Fulton can do that, you know, after 2 years they haven't paid taxes, they can do something with it instead of allowing them to go 15 years. They've actually just sold the one house that we were looking at buying at one stage, and now something has fallen through. But 15 years later, this house has just sat there, hasn't paid taxes. It just seems to me that's inviting squatters just to come there.
And therein lies the problem. We can't let anything go for 15 years. We have to address those issues sooner than later. You know, I could probably go back over the history and give a lot of reasons why that happened or didn't happen. But going forward, we have to start identifying those type of hurdles and say, this happened then? What is that going to look like? Back to your point, going forward, what's that going to look like? Is that going to be acceptable going forward? Who are we as a city? Is that acceptable going forward? It can't be acceptable. If we're going to put Fulton first and we're going to make Fulton the priority, vacant houses for 15 years, I don't think that's part of our plan. That can't be part of our vision and part of our plan. So that's when we start identifying. That's why meetings like this are so vital, because you're sharing that information. We're taking note. We're saying, okay, that's an issue. Now we work with the Common Council in that area, and they're saying, identify with me in your areas how many homes have been sitting there for X amount of years. And then we work with the codes and say, okay, we've identified these, and we go back to the priority list and say, okay, here's our priority list, and this is how we're going to address those properties. And now you can see it's the community coming together, it's city government coming together, it's our elected officials coming together, it's our departments coming together, and that's how we're gonna win it. But it starts first with identifying it. We can't identify it if we don't bring the community together and have transparency in our conversation. It's got to start there. You've got to be able to have a voice in it, and you can't fall on deaf ears. This job requires a lot of work, and I'm going to give it every bit of time that it needs to make sure that we get the job done. You know, those who know me will know that if I have to put 60 hours in a week, whatever it takes to get the job done. And so I work late, I come in early, that's just my style, it's what I do. I can't sit here and say, here's what my schedule's gonna be, but what I can tell you is, is whatever it needs, whatever the city needs, whatever our city needs, whatever time it needs, it's going to get it. Because we have to make sure we're doing the job and we're doing it right, and I'm going to allocate whatever time I need to that process. And you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to giving all the time it needs. A lot of work to be done, but we can do it.
We don't seem to get any attention from the county government. Is there any way for the county and the Fulton to be able to...
Absolutely. It's all about partnerships.
Yeah, but I don't see any impact.
And maybe you don't see it because it's not being transparent, it's not being communicated. We have great county representatives. I have great relationships with the county. I work with them all the time. And they see Fulton as a great opportunity. We're the second biggest municipality in the county. So there's a lot of opportunity here. There's a lot of opportunity from the county IDA, from economic development, from tourism, a lot of opportunity there. I work with the county legislators. I hear what they're saying about the possibilities for Fulton. If you're not hearing it, then we're not talking about it enough, and we're not making that transparent.
Here's an example of something that's going on.
The Nestle's property. The county is going to invest in the Nestle's property and build what's called a spec building. A spec building is like an example building, if you will. It's a building to show other investors and developers what could be, right? So they put up a spec building. They're going to create a road. It's going to go all the way back to behind the Fulton Springs, and they're going to create that infrastructure there. That they're going to create this spec building. They're going to invest, and it's a significant dollar amount. They're going to invest in Nestle, and they're going to so that they can show developers what can be in that property. That's one example. We're going to look at the Fulton, the airport. The airport is owned by the county. That's a resource for us. We have a port not that far away. We have an airport not that far away. They just built a hangar for a gentleman who owns, what's the trucking company? It's for John White's building. Gypsum. Thank you.
Gypsum.
He has his own plane. He flies it in and out of here, and they just built a hangar out there, and they're going to put more investment in there, and they're going to tap into our underground infrastructure so they can continue to build the county airport so that businesses who want to fly in and out of here can use that airport. There's another example of how the county wants to engage with Fulton. They want to work with us. And they want to engage with us. And there's definitely opportunity there. Well, thank you all very much for coming. I appreciate it. I'm sorry that I ran a little bit over, but the questions were great. You have my information if you want to reach out. Email me, Facebook, please, my website. And also, we're going to be having our last pop-up meeting this round next Wednesday, same time, over at Meadowbrook. So thank you all for coming. I appreciate it.